4 o'clock, every Monday from 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening over Rumble or YouTube and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationalliberty.org.
John, you sound really muffled to me. I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but you're coming in muffled.
Are you okay with anybody else?
Yeah, muffled to me too now, John.
Anybody else hear me good enough? Let me try changing the mic.
And very low in level.
How about this? Is this any better? Eric?
Yeah, not really.
All right, well, if anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of the website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up. We left off last week with a scripture reading. What's that about? Okay, I guess that's in the wrong place. Let me shut that off. All right, anyway, we're in the Gospel of John, picking up tonight on chapter 19, read by Alexander Scorby. Gospel of John, Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 19. Then Pilate therefore took Jesus and scourged him. And the soldiers plaited a crown of thorns and put it on his head. And they put on him a purple robe and said, Hail, King of the Jews! They smote him with their hands. Pilate therefore went forth again and saith unto them, Behold, I bring him forth to you, that ye may know that I find no fault in him. Then came Jesus forth, wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. And Pilate saith unto them, Behold the man. When the chief priests therefore and officers saw him, they cried out, saying, Crucify him! Crucify him! Pilate saith unto them, Take ye him and crucify him, for I find no fault in him. The Jews answered him, We have a law, and by our law he ought to die, because he made himself the Son of God. When Pilate therefore heard that saying, he was the more afraid, and went again into the judgment hall, and saith unto Jesus, Whence art thou? But Jesus gave him no answer. Then saith Pilate unto him, Speakest thou not unto me? Knowest thou not that I have power to crucify thee, and have power to release thee? Jesus answered, Thou couldest have no power at all against me, except given thee from above. Therefore, he that delivered me unto thee hath the greater sin. And from thenceforth Pilate sought to release him. But the Jews cried out, saying, If thou let this man go, thou art not Caesar's friend. Whosoever maketh himself a king speaketh against Caesar. When Pilate therefore heard that saying, he brought Jesus forth, and sat down in the judgment seat in a place that is called the pavement, but in the Hebrew, Gabbatha. And it was the preparation of the Passover, and about the sixth hour. And he saith unto the Jews, Behold your king. But they cried out, Away with him, away with him, crucify him. Pilate saith unto them, Shall I crucify your king? The chief priests answered, We have no king but Caesar. Then delivered he him therefore unto them to be crucified. And they took Jesus and led him away. And he, bearing his cross, went forth into a place called the place of a skull, which is called in Hebrew Golgotha, where they crucified him, and two other with him, on either side one, and Jesus in the midst. And Pilate wrote a title, and put it on the cross, and the writing was, Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews. This title then read many of the Jews, for the place where Jesus was crucified was nigh to the city, and it was written in Hebrew and Greek and Latin. Then said the chief priests of the Jews to Pilate, Write not the King of the Jews, but that he said, I am King of the Jews. Pilate answered, What I have written, I have written. Then the soldiers, when they had crucified Jesus, took his garments, and made four parts, to every soldier a part, and also his coat. Now the coat was without seam, woven from the top throughout. They said therefore among themselves, Let us not rend it, but cast lots for it, whose it shall be. That the scripture might be fulfilled, which saith, They parted my raiment among them, and for my vesture they did cast lots. These things therefore the soldiers did. Now there stood by the cross of Jesus his mother, and his mother's sister, Mary the wife of Cleophas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus therefore saw his mother, and the disciples standing by whom he loved, he saith unto his mother, Woman, behold thy son. Then saith he to the disciple, Behold thy mother. And from that hour that disciple took her unto his own home. After this, Jesus, knowing that all things were now accomplished, that the scripture might be fulfilled, saith, I thirst. Now there was set a vessel full of vinegar, and they filled a sponge with vinegar, and put it upon hyssop, and put it to his mouth. When Jesus therefore had received the vinegar, he said, It is finished. And he bowed his head, and gave up the ghost. Whose therefore, because it was the preparation, that the body should not remain upon the cross on the Sabbath day, for that Sabbath day was an high day, besought Pilate that their legs might be broken, and that they might be taken away. Then came the soldiers, and brake the legs of the first, and of the other which was crucified with him. But when they came to Jesus, and saw that he was dead already, they brake not his legs. But one of the soldiers with a spear pierced his side, and forthwith came there out blood and water. And he that saw it bare record, and his record is true. And he knoweth that he saith true, that ye might believe. For these things were done, that the scripture should be fulfilled, A bone of him shall not be broken. And again another scripture saith, They shall look on him whom they pierced. And after this, Joseph of Arimathea, being a disciple of Jesus, but secretly for fear of the Jews, besought Pilate that he might take away the body of Jesus. And Pilate gave him leave. He came therefore and took the body of Jesus. And there came also Nicodemus, which at the first came to Jesus by night, and brought a mixture of myrrh and aloes, about 100 pound weight. Then took they the body of Jesus, and wound it in linen clothes with the spices, as the manner of the Jews is to bury. Now in the place where he was crucified, there was a garden, and in the garden a new sepulchre, wherein was never man yet laid. There laid they Jesus, therefore, because of the Jews' preparation day, for the sepulchre was nigh at hand.
Okay, Jan, do we have any questions tonight or any announcements? Before that, we get into the queue, it's star 6 and a 1, if you're on a phone, and if you're on an Apple browser, should be a button there to get into the queue. Nobody in the queue right now, so go ahead, Jan.
We have a lot of questions, John, and the first one is about a page long and has a bunch of codes in it. So...
Anything, can you make short of anything in there?
No, I can't. It's going to have to go through the whole thing, I guess.
All right, well, why don't you put that off to the last, and we'll see if we're going to answer it or not.
Okay. You might be better off finding it in your emails than me reading it to you. Okay, easy one. Does it matter which Black's Law dictionary we have?
Well, I think the fourth is one of the best. I do have the second, which is good also. I think once it gets up around the sixth, and I think seventh, they start to make some changes or leave things out. I'm not too familiar with that. I've heard these things. I haven't, because I don't have those particular ones. But I'm pretty confident in the fourth edition. And we do offer the fourth edition for download. I know we have it on our... if you come into our court access in the common law course, you'll find it there. But I'm pretty sure we have it here under law. And if you come to law, underneath education starts here, and you come over to court forms and process, I think we have a copy in here. So let me see. It might be towards the end. But anyway, if it's not here, it is on our site somewhere. I'll have to look for it, or other people can look for it. Let's see. It might be here, right? Here it is. I got the second edition for download, got the fourth edition for download, and I got Bovier's Law for download. So if anybody's interested. Okay, next question.
Okay. As Pilate advised, to show our progress on creating an affidavit for authorization to reclaim documents on behalf of a spouse for property estate. Is this correct?
I didn't. Read that again.
It's confusing, John. As Pilate advised, and I think that was Terry Pilate,
right,
to show our progress on creating an affidavit for authorization to reclaim documents on behalf of a spouse for property estate. Is that correct?
Yeah, I don't know. Terry, do you know what they're talking about? Sounds like they're talking about your online name here.
I think Terry directly commented on that to the people, but it doesn't appear to be a question, actually.
Yeah, I don't understand it. Yeah. All right, next question. I don't know if Terry, think Terry opened the mic. Did you open your mic, Terry? If you're talking, we're not hearing.
Let's
take the next question, and we'll see if she can get her mic.
Can you hear me now?
There you go.
Sorry, I couldn't find the working mic.
You're over-modulating.
Say it?
Back off your mic. You're over-modulating.
Okay. They had a lady, and he had married her, and there was a probate problem. And she had hired a lawyer and given him all her papers. And I said, well, go back and get and make them make copies of it and give you the originals back. And he said, oh, can I do that? And I said, yeah, if you feel like you're going to have any problems, then make an affidavit saying, you know, with your wife, saying, yeah, I authorized my husband to get them back. That's all it was. John, are you there?
I don't hear him. Are you muted, John?
Yeah, I was. Yeah, you're coming in like a broken speaker. Is everyone hearing Terry clear, or is she coming in like a broken speaker?
I need to reset my mic, so I'll be off for a second. Go ahead.
All right. Well, we'll talk at the end of the question and see if we'll bring it back up.
Okay.
All right, what do you got next, John?
Under the Fifth Amendment to the Bill of Rights, when the accused have the right to confront their accuser, does that include the right to approach the grand jury when they are the accusers if a proper, lawful indictment was furnished?
I'm still not... Try reading that again. I didn't understand that.
Okay.
Try it again.
Under the Fifth Amendment to the Bill of Rights, when the accused have the right to confront their accuser, does that include the right to approach the grand jury when they are the accusers if
No.
a proper, lawful indictment was furnished?
They don't have the right to approach. They're saying the right to approach the grand jury concerning that? Is that what they're
yeah.
saying?
Yeah,
yeah, they don't have that right, no. The grand jury doesn't necessarily have to hear anything from the accused. I mean, they could request that, I guess, but generally speaking, they just have to hear the accusations. You know, it is unfortunate because we have a lot of really bad lawyers out there that seem to really trying to make their career by the number of prosecutions that they can get, I guess. I don't know, whatever it is that motivates them. But often people... You know, they'll come up with things, accusing individuals of things, and then holding back on things that would have, take a different direction and maybe prove that they're innocent. But at the end of the day, they do have to give all of that information to the accused at some point. And I presume sometimes because they're so evil that they hold things back and never give anything to anybody. But anyway. No, the grand jury does not have to call or listen, nor does anybody have a right to want to talk with the grand jury. And after the indictment is done, it's done. Now it's up to the trial court. And if you could prove your innocence, you could try to squash it right up front, there is a possibility that you can move for a dismissal and show evidence that clears you without any doubt at all. But that possibility is there, of course. It's not up to the judge to decide anyway. The jury really has to hear that. There is a lot of things going on with the judge and the prosecutor, and again, the person the accused often gets the raw side of things. But anyway, next question.
Okay. Attached is what I shared about the senior age process at two county meetings, wherein the updated parcel assessments and future taxes were being shared by tax-paid employees with their constituents. I let them know that all it would take is an honorable bank in our county that would bypass the Federal Reserve System and taken directly to the U.S. Treasury for notes required to fulfill local needs. Wouldn't this be an appropriate strategy to share with NLA members? If so, I've included an Excel template and two newspaper articles. The 1910 article reveals concerns about the passage of the Central Bank or Federal Reserve Act, and the 1937 article explains the senior age process without using the word senior age.
Okay. I've never heard the word senior age there. Read the first part, well, the main part of the question without going.
The word seniorage is the cost to print new money. And so you've got to take out the seniorage. So when you produce $100 and the seniorage was $5, then you only produce $95.
Well, maybe that's why that if you go get a silver coin, it's usually 90, it's always 90%. They hold back 10%. And I always thought that part of that was, and I think they use copper, and part of that is maybe because silver is so malleable and it could be a problem. So I think they harden it at the same time. So maybe they have enough of, copper or other metal in there. I'm not sure of the makeup. I never really looked for the makeup other than the fact that silver is 90%. So that might be what they're talking about. But read the first part of that question, or the beginning of that question again.
Okay. Attached is what I shared about the senior age process at two county meetings, wherein updated parcel assessments and future taxes were being shared by paid or tax-paid employees with their constituents. I let them know that all it would take is an honorable bank in our county that would bypass the Federal Reserve System and taken directly to the U.S. Treasury for the notes required to fulfill our local needs. Wouldn't this be an appropriate strategy to share with NLA members?
Yeah, I'm not sure what they're getting at with the end. Now that I understand the word, I understand the question a lot better, but I'm still not sure understanding where they're getting, what point they're trying to get to, or exactly what question they're real, or point really they're making, because it doesn't sound like a question. Other than the fact it's something that we might share. Did you see the copy of the attachment, Jan?
A copy of the what, John?
It sounded like they put an attachment there to the question. Was there a copy of an attachment?
No, I did not.
All right.
I didn't
know. Right, yeah. Again, I'll have to look into that. I'll see if I can find that email and see if there's an attachment to it. And we'll try to deal with it another time, maybe next week if we think it's necessary. All right, next question.
Okay, regarding the issue of double jeopardy, how would one distinguish or overcome the Fifth Amendment language of twice put in jeopardy used in statutory jurisdictions versus the maximum of law? No one should be punished or twice punished for the same offense under common law jurisdiction.
Right. Well, twice in jeopardy, obviously, you can't be tried twice for the same crime. I mean, the main thing is, and we've seen this before, I've seen this with a particular doctor that had a cure for for cancer, and he actually had to leave the States. I think he went to Mexico, and they took him into court, I don't know, 3-4 times, literally tried him. And that would be, of course, double jeopardy, and in this case, more than twice. So, but I'm not understanding the question other than the fact that double jeopardy is part of the Constitution in Amendment 5. And it reads this way, let's see, nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy. Also, they brought up statutory. A statutory court is a court that runs by statute. It's a court not of record. And so it's a chancery court. And I've been doing a lot of research on that chancery court. And come up, pretty much any court that proceeds with statutes is a chancery court, period. And it's not a court of record, and they have no power to fine, they have no power to incarcerate. I'm also something I kind of just picked up on and by looking at this particular word and studying it. I also picked up that all of the appointed judges are administrative judges, okay, on the federal level, that is. So you have judges that are appointed by the president. There are 94 of them, one for each federal district. They need to be approved by the Senate. And they can then choose other judges, same thing on the state level also. They can choose other judges, and they're called administrative law judges. And they have the power of magistrate. So they have the powers of the magistrate. They can set bonds, I mean, you know, and bail and different things. But if your case is a law case, from what I'm gathering right now, I'm going to do a paper on this, I think. From what I'm gathering right now, if it's a law case, then the appointed judge by the president is the one that needs to hear that case. So anytime you go into a federal court and there's an administrative judge there, and it's not the individual that was, picked by the president, picked by the president and approved by the Senate, then those other judges really can't hear the case. They can only do the preliminary work. And it's an interesting thing because every judge that I've gotten in the federal level, it's always been the case where they're appointed judges and not the ones particularly. And I think even on the ones that the judges appoint, I think they also have to be approved by the Senate also. So I haven't gotten to that point yet to be sure, but I'm pretty sure that is the case. But nevertheless, every federal district has a court of record, and the court of record must be heard by, once you get to the trial point, it must be heard, and again, even that judge cannot make any decisions if it's a criminal case because it's going it has to go before the jury. But of course, they ignore all that and bypass it all and do what they want anyway. But that's the law. All right, next question.
Yeah, I see there was a little piece on next page here on that question, John. It says, the courts have constructed the legal fiction of when does jeopardy attach versus under common law. The inquiry is very simple. Never tried twice, which means one and done. Okay, that's the last question. If you want to take a crack at that real long one, why don't you dig through your emails for the March 10th at about 9:16 p.m., and then you can have it to see. Otherwise, it's very difficult.
Yeah, I'll look at that, and we'll see if we can't deal with it next week. Meanwhile, if that person's listening in, maybe they can send something in, shorten it up a little bit, and see once what we could do with that. But we'll put that off until next week.
Okay. And then that's the last question, John.
Okay. All right. Again, if anybody wants to get into the queue, if you're on a phone, it's *6-1 to get into the queue. If you're on a phone, if you're on an app or a browser, should be a button to enter into the queue. We only got one person in the queue at the moment, so we'll take it from there. Okay, we've got Warren. Is this Warren from New York? You got the mic. Warren, you got the mic. We're not hearing you if you're talking. Maybe you're muted on your side. Is anyone hearing Warren?
No.
Warren, try it again. You're not coming through if you're talking. All right. Again, there's nobody in the queue. If nobody wants to get into the queue, maybe we'll take a look at some recent writings that I put together. I just, I don't know, try one more time for Warren, otherwise we're going to clear the queue. Warren, can you hear us? Okay, not hearing Warren. All right, someone else just came in. John from Michigan, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Yeah, the CNH is what it costs to coin the money. It's not printing the money. I mean, the difference between a $1 bill and a $100 bill is nothing. It's just ink on a thing. But CNH is, and that's what you call CNH, not seniorage, I think is what they call it. But that's what it costs to make, you know, to melt the stuff and to grade it and to stamp it into a coin.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what they were talking about there. It sounded like they wanted the local bank to make money for. I didn't understand that question either. I'm not sure what they were trying to get to there.
Yeah, maybe if they want more information, maybe they can rewrite it and send it back in. But again, do you have any idea on what the mixture is? I never looked it up on silver dollars, silver coins, 10%. Is that 10% copper, do you know?
Well, copper or nickel, whatever, like that. Yeah, so it's just to make it harder. You know, if the coins are, silver is pretty soft, gold is really soft, so they got to make it an alloy. But it's the amount of silver in there, and silver dollar is about 371.5 grains of fine silver. Now they mix some other stuff in there to get to the ounce, whatever, like that, because you know it's not an ounce as it was. But
copper and nickel both have a good value, so maybe they put enough in there to cover that 10%. I know they use often the 10% is used for leverage, on money. You see a lot of that goes on offshore, which is really just a con job off there, a ripoff. But in any event.
Well, I mean, your silver rounds, they're 1 ounce. You know, I mean, those are 1 ounce of fine silver. And,
yeah, that's true silver, you're right.
Pardon?
Have you tried to see how easy that is affected, by trying to scratch it or something like that? I mean, it sounds like they would need something in there to keep it from being so soft.
Yeah, well, normally you don't, you know, those are all protected, whatever like that. They're not circulated. I'm sure you could circulate them if you wanted to, but if you want to, you know, junk silver is what you want to get. And even that, you look at that and it's worn out. You know, when they get if it wears top off of them, and after a while what they'll do is they'll weigh that junk silver, you know, because if it's all worn out, if it's all brand new almost, there's more weight there than there is if it's been circulated, it's all smooth. So they can weigh that, and you multiply that by 0.9, it'll tell you how much silver's in it.
Right, but the face value will always remain the same. You still have face value.
It will, unless you're just buying junk silver. If you're just buying junk silver for the weight, you literally weigh it and multiply it by 0.9, and that'll tell you how many ounces are in there, and that's troy ounces of
right.
silver.
Yeah, but, you know, the best investment out there is junk silver. You can get that cheaper than buying silver, you know, like the rounds to begin with, but and they're guaranteed face value no matter what. But also, the bottom line, in my opinion, because it's U.S. coins, even the coins that changes its values, whether it has any precious metals in it or not, still maintains face value, and that's the guarantee of the United States for the coins. So, you know, I think the best way for a really investment in preparing for a collapse is getting boxes of halves. And, they're the half silver dollars. They look like they're not silver dollars, but they look just like the half silver dollars. It's dollar for dollar, and when you have the collapse, that's going to maintain its face value. Now, I do think that what Trump is going to do at some point, I'm kind of surprised that he hasn't sunk the dollar yet. But maybe not. Again, I'm not an expert or anything of that nature. He's working with saving that money. Was it 20% he's looking to give back to the people? We've heard that everyone will be getting $5,000 eventually. At least that's what they're trying to push. I think they're trying to push that through Congress. I don't know where that's at this point. But then I heard recently that it's now $6,000. So I think it's going to be dollar for dollar because 80% is going to go to pay off. No, I think they said 80% is going to go to pay off the debt. 20% is going to go back to the people. Now, when the collapse actually comes, and it has to come at some point, and I'm thinking we're going to be able to turn the dollars in for face value of a real dollar at some point, and it'll be backed ultimately and supported by the savings that is gained, like that 20%, because it's going to be a lot more than $6,000. But also, once the arrest starts, like he has mentioned many times, if you rob the diamond store and you get caught, you got to give the diamonds back. So everything these people own has got to come back into the treasury. And that's a huge amount of money. It easily will be able to pay off whatever debt we do have. I think a lot of the debt is really goes back to the Federal Reserve Bank, which is a fraud, and not necessarily that we have to pay that part back. But I think there's going to be so much money involved, and that's why he says things like people are going to be very happy or very rich or something similar to that. Not necessarily rich, but all that has to go back to the people. I mean, the government can't take it and keep it. Somehow it's got to benefit the people. Paying off the debt, of course, is one thing. Putting some money back to the people. And this also will be a worldwide thing because it's not only us here in the United States that have been affected and defrauded by the Federal Reserve. The dollar is the world market. Really is what supports the monetary process throughout the world. And so everybody's getting a loss in on this. So it's not just us that have been injured. And that's the other part of this thing, being injured. I think it's going to be really a wild ride when they get to that point and finally settle down with what kind of monies are involved here. But we'll see what happens. But two things I suggest strongly. Silver is so underrated as far as cost is concerned. Gold is really up there. Anybody know where gold's at right now? John, do you know where gold's at? Announced?
It's close to over 3,000. I'm not sure where it's at, but it's close to over 3,000 a day.
I heard something like that, and it was coming up on $4,000 or something, but that's insane. That's really, wow. That's ready for the collapse, no doubt. I mean, look at the last time I wrote a paper on this, it was worth three-quarters of a penny, and that's when it was around $2,000, a little more than that. That brings us down to half of three-quarters of a penny. So what does that bring us down to? 6/8, so 3/8 of a penny. Is that, let me think, 3/4 is 6/8, yeah, so 3/8 of a penny. That's an amazing.
Fourth strong suggestion I think that they put out there was, thou shalt not steal more than 5% a year compounded annually. I think that's what it says, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, anyway, I think, in my opinion, in a strong opinion, I think the best thing, if anybody wants to put money aside, if they don't really have the money to really make an investment, get coins, because I think there's a security in coins. I still think there's going to be a security in the funny money, too, maybe. But anyway, the coins are
3,004. It was at 3,012 at some point. Now it's at 3,004, which I didn't know. John surprised me there. I saw it go just over 3 the other day. I didn't know it had gone higher. And silver's just under 34, 33.87. So, yeah, crazy, crazy stuff, high yield.
That's insane.
About 90-1, something like that?
Well, right at 2000 is when I did this paper. I originally did it 2008 where the dollar was worth 2 cents, okay? And when it was 2000, I redid this paper and put it up on the website, and it's a 3/4 of a penny. So if we're up another 1,000, 3,000, then I guess you'd add another eighth to that, I think. So it'd be 7/8. No, you'd take away an eighth.
Away an eighth, yeah, it'd be 5/8.
I think that's what it would be. I'd have to sit down and calculate it. But, you know, we're based off the ratio of the original value of silver to gold and to the what's called the dollar. And that goes back to 1913. And the dollar was $19.96, so you might as well say $20. So 20, 40, 60, 80, 100. So that's one-fifth of a... one-fifth of an ounce of gold. So 20, 40, 60, 80, 100? Yeah. So five of them would be, what is it, 10?
It's 3,000 multiplied by 30, so it's five times, 150 difference, 150 times more. So,
right.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to get to the point is the value and the ratio between gold and silver. You see, it's at this point, if it's $20 and it takes... 10 ounces of silver to make 1 ounce of gold, as far as the value is concerned. So one silver coin is one-tenth of a dollar. Okay. Now, when you take that and figure the ratio at this point, I mean, let's go back to last year. Okay, the ratio was 2,600, you're up 3 pennies, okay, would equal... 3/4 of a penny, so five times that, so those coins would equal an ounce of gold once everything levels off. I mean, that's a huge, huge return on your money. Okay, so if you're going to save in precious metals, I strongly suggest to do it in silver. The best, in my opinion, because it's the cheapest to do, is to do the junk silver, which is the silver dollars. And I don't know why they call it junk silver. Ooh, I wonder why they gave it that name. That's weird. But in any event,
what do you call sandwich coins if the junk silver is junk? So, you make a good point though, because you know the paper money is made by the Fed. Even the sandwich coins are made by the U.S. Treasury, and so I mean it says it's a quarter of a dollar. A quarter says a quarter of a dollar. Therefore, it should be a quarter of 1 ounce. You know, 371.5 grains of silver. And you could extrapolate that out, and basically a quarter would be worth what if it's $20 an ounce, it'd be 1/80th of an ounce of gold.
Yeah, 10 silver dollars would equal an ounce of gold. So 10 or 20 half dollars, however you want to look at it. And you could, dimes are the same thing, and actually nickels are too. I save in nickels also. You could buy a box of nickels for $100, and all those nickels still have the, you know, in it copper and also nickel. But the bottom line is, even if it's junk, okay, they're calling silver junk, I don't know why, but in any event, even if it's metals that aren't necessarily precious, steel or something or whatever they use, even that being the case, it's the face value. The coin moves with inflation, up or down. Either way, it moves back and forth. So again, you know, once the economy collapses or the dollar collapses and things bring back to an adjustment of a proper ratio, getting back to real money, then, you know, at that point, it's worth the true value of a dollar. So, and you're getting it for 3/4, you're getting, the dollar right now is worth 3/4 of a penny, at least last year, because we have to redo the ratios on that. So last year, the dollar was worth 3/4 of a penny. So for the investment of 3/4 of a penny, you get a full, dollar, which is one silver dollar. So,
right. You know, the thing about it is that there is a definition of a dollar. That's in the U.S. Code. It's 371.5 grains of silver, stamped into coin by the United States Treasury. That's the definition of a dollar, silver dollar. And then there is no such thing.
But the coin has a value less than that. It probably has other metals in it. But, you know, if you go back and read through it, because I have looked into it myself somewhat, not deeply, though, it does fluctuate with the value of inflation. So, just put it to a product. If you go out and buy a dozen of eggs for a dollar at one point in time, and then you get the inflation, and you go out and spend $3 for it, because of the inflation, but it'll always be that $1. In other words, it moves, the value of that ratio moves up and down. It's the coin, it's the face value is the key, the word face value. You know, when I sue, I always sue for, you know, silver dollars, Morgan silver dollars. So if I sue for and ask for $1,000 in face value silver, Morgan silver dollars, then it's like, well, what would that be right now? What's $1,000 in silver?
$35,000 or $38,000. They're about $38 a piece right now, silver, Morgan's.
Yeah, so yeah, you're looking almost $40,000 for $1,000.
The problem is you're looking at, John, is you're looking at it the way everybody else does, is with the paper, value of the paper. The value of the paper was going down. The value of the silver is exactly the same. An ounce of silver 200 years ago, 3,000 years ago, last year, is still an ounce of silver.
That's right. Yeah.
You're looking at the right hand of the bell, so.
You know, the other thing I'm kind of perplexed by is why is Trump playing around with that other coin, the
Bitcoin?
What?
The Bitcoin, the digital?
Yeah, I don't understand why he's even dealing with that, because it's just supported by nothing.
There's nothing there. It's you know, first off, money is just a way to deal with commerce. And I don't care if you're dealing with shells or silver or gold or Bitcoin or whatever like that. If it's honest, you're fine on the thing. All the way is, the only thing it is a keep way to keep track of everything and keep track or keep scores.
Keep honest.
Yeah. And the thing about silver or gold or platinum or bourbons or cigarettes, depending on what you're doing, is that, you know, there's limited supply of that stuff. There's an unlimited supply of credit on the thing. That's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with credit. They're lending us our credit at interest. And it's crazy. You know, but again, an ounce of silver is an ounce of silver is an ounce of silver. And a lot of the stuff we have, that was minted in mine hundreds of years ago. I mean, they don't throw it away. So it's the same silver. It's worth exactly the same amount. It's weight. And the dollar is a unit of measurement for money. It's not money. It's a unit of measurement for money. Like a quart is a unit of measurement of liquid, and a pound is a unit of measurement of weight. A dollar is a unit of measurement of money. And when you say, I want $10, is the logical thing to do would be to say, hey, I want 5 quarts. And I would say, 5 quarts of what? And when you say, I want $5, it's $5 of what? That's what you've got to think in terms of, not paper, because paper's paper.
But the key thing is the value. Of course, our money's not backed by gold and silver these days. But and we need to get back to that. And if we're going to obey the Constitution, and if they're going to obey the Constitution, then we're going to get back to, you know, silver and gold and silver. And now paper backed by gold or silver, I think, would be acceptable. People say, well, you know, if you walk around with half dollars and dollars and dimes and different change, it'd be a lot to carry. But the value of the money was so powerful, that's not necessarily true. You know, you could put quite a few coins in your pocket, didn't have to fill your pocket, but that would really buy a lot. You know, anything that has value, I mean, yeah, bartering is bartering for items that you might want to eat or wear, clothes or food. It has value. It has something to it. There's something behind it. And so it's appreciated. Gold is appreciated because it's valued. The silver and even nickel and copper has an appreciation because it has values and has certain qualities about that metals. You know, but when you go, if anybody who took the civics course, there is some videos in there, I'm pretty sure it's in the civics course, it's called The Money Masters. And he did a thing going back, looking at different things were used for money. And every time anything they used that it didn't have a value in itself, it always eventually failed. And that it was only silver and gold, which is Bible money, it's biblical money, it goes back even before Christ's time, but it's biblical money, and it's been appreciated by mankind all the way back as far as we can know, and because it has a value, okay? And they didn't even understand the technical value of those metals back in those days.
Well, you could use it for a lot of things. And the reason, you know, silver, gold, copper, iron, all that has value because it takes so much effort to get it out of the ground, okay? And there's a lot more silver. Right. A lot more silver than there is gold. There's a lot more iron than there is silver, and copper is a little more rare than iron, stuff like that. And so those things have value because it's like stored labor. that's basically what you're looking at, stored labor, to get it out of the ground. And the reason the value of silver is about 15 to 1 or 20 to 1 with gold is because you normally, when you're mining it, you get 15 times as much silver as you do gold coming out of the ground. Mm-hmm. And that's why it historically has been like that. And they bring it up to about 20 to 1 because silver is, if like you're saying, if you're trying to carry a lot of it around, you can carry 20 times the value around in a piece of gold as you can silver. You don't have to carry that much.
But
the thing about the value now, you know, you buy something, you make it by hand, and it's expensive. Then you mechanize it, and you start making things really fast, and you get tractors instead of a horse and a thing, and so you start making a lot more stuff, and you get a lot more production. When you get more production, you have more stuff that's represented by the value of the dollar, and so that dollar is not going to ever buy the same thing. As you get more production, the price is going to go down naturally.
Again, the ratio, I don't know. Well, I understand, I think, what you're saying, and what you're trying to say, I think, is because we could do more production somehow.
That right.
It actually would be a little less than what it was prior to the, you know, type of production we get with, like, a horse and wagon type thing. And I never looked at it from that perspective, but bottom line, nevertheless, it still has value. It has something behind it. Bitcoin, I sat and wasted my time listening to some stuff on Bitcoin that someone told me, hey, go listen to this if you want to understand Bitcoin. And I don't know, I spent a lot of time, maybe an hour, listening to this video and going through all these things. It never got to the point that it has anything behind it. Nobody could tell me it has anything behind it. It just talks about the mathematical equations that makes it difficult, I guess, to be able to, you know, break into it or whatever it is that they're doing. But nevertheless, Bitcoin, it's really, whoever came in first, they did the best thing. It's a pyramid, in my opinion, anyway. I mean, the guy put this together, and a lot of people came in early. I mean, they're millionaires off of this on nothing.
It's basically an XYZ point someplace out in the ether, whatever you want to call it, that supposedly have some value to it. I mean, and so, you know, if you lose it, the power goes out, whatever, like that, you're screwed, okay? You know,
you create a process to maintain control of it, and that's the value of it. Even that doesn't make any sense, because the person who created that became very rich, and so did all the people that came in early. Again, it's a pyramid.
Right, and every once in a while they cut the amount down on there, so it raises the price on the stuff. I don't understand it, but I mean, if you can't hold it in your hand, you don't have anything.
That's right. That's my opinion. That's right. And a lot of these places, when you go buy gold or silver, you know, they will hold it for you. But that's crazy. I wouldn't let anybody hold the money. I'd want it myself, because things collapse and they disappear and you've got nothing.
Right, but I mean, if you have it in your house, you have to have a safe. You have to have to dig a hole. You have to, you know, I mean. You have to hide it, whatever, like that, and worry about people's...
You can go and put it in a safety deposit box.
Right, and then all of a sudden they shut the banks down, you can't get to it. There is no answer.
You can't get to it maybe for a while, but at some point you get in, because they can't take your property. The closing of the banks would be to try to settle the market up and try to prevent more damage from taking place, and they must have a plan for that, you know. They talk about the Black Holiday or something, you know. And it'll probably happen on a weekend, you know. But again, I think Trump's got a different plan. We'll see when it happens. But again, my opinion, strong opinion, if you don't have money really to make the investment, at least save coins.
Oh, yeah, because it's stamped by the U.S. Treasury.
That's right, guaranteed, right. Yeah, whatever the value of that coin is, going up or down, and in a total collapse, if they set it back to a 20-to-1 ratio, which is 20 to 1, 12 silver dollars equal 1 ounce of gold. That's the ratio. Once that ratio returns, then those coins will have the face value of that silver dollar.
Even the clad coins should, because they were stamped by the Treasury. It's got the power of the Treasury behind it. You have, you know, full faith and credit of the Treasury behind it. It'll be interesting to see how that works, but I agree with you. I mean, and... You know, I don't care if you've got nickels or pennies or quarters or junk silver or whatever like that. Technically, a quarter is a quarter is a quarter. And it should be a quarter of a dollar, and it doesn't really make any difference what it is. It'd be interesting. People have been waiting and hoping and praying that they're alive at this time, and we're here. We're pretty lucky, you know. We're going to see it all coming down. So.
Right. Well, again, on our civics course, there is a video called The Money Masters. I think it's two parts. It's long. I don't remember how long each one of them is, but I know there's at least two parts to it. And the guy went into a deep study on looking at money, what was used as money going back thousands of years, and in relationship to, you know, silver and gold being used as money even going back thousands of years, and showing that everything fails except silver and gold. You know, so.
Well, there's never been a fiat currency that's went down to zero. How's that sound?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the dollar should be any different. The only thing you're talking about the paying the national debt, a lot of that national debt is compounded interest, which is, you know, they didn't give us anything. You could pay the national debt off with a piece of toilet paper, make a check out of it, and give it to them, and they would get exactly what they gave us, which is nothing.
We can give them our no good dollars. But anyway, going back to that point.
That's their paper, their Federal Reserve notes. They belong to the Federal Reserve.
Federal Reserve, like you say, there's interest. We shouldn't have to pay that back. And also, they did some backing, too. We shouldn't have to pay that back because the whole thing is a fraud from day one. And it was all about them making money, and they're thieves. Not necessarily the people who invested in it, per se, but nevertheless. So we shouldn't have to pay any of that back. But there is some that's backed by different places that we would have to pay back.
Well, you can differentiate that. You know, most of the stuff, you know, go tell them go pack sand, okay?
Yeah. Well, okay, let's move on from another subject. You got anything else, John?
I just want to let you know that CNH is what it costs to take this silver stuff and stamp it into a coin. It's intensive, and it costs money to do that. So that's why you can call CNH. So, you know, if you pay that extra bonus on there for the privilege of getting it weighed and refined and stamped into a coin. That's what that is.
All right. Well, we'll take our next.
Thank you. I yield. How's that sound? I talk too much.
Thanks, John. Well, appreciate it. Okay, next person, Bob. What state you're from, Bob? You got the mic.
Hello, John. Thanks for allowing me on. I want to ask about law, Article 4. I really want to talk about Texas, and it just seems like our form of government has been taken over by 36 Republicans.
You're talking about Article 4, Section 4, right?
Yeah, and we've had this problem for the last 14 years where we get down to Austin and then we get a speaker that's controlled by Obama lawyers or the Democrats, and you know, and we really nailed down the Republicans this time. We had 86 of them, and they said they would take the pick of the Republican caucus, and that guy would be the Speaker of the House. Well, they chose that guy, and there were 36 of them that didn't like who they chose, and then they went over pre-planned to the Democrats, and we got somebody that's worse than any Democrat. And their legal thing,
these individuals were all rhinos, I guess, right?
Well, they're evil. They're treasonous, and argument.
They're Republicans in name only. The point is that they're really
almost all of them
have gotten into the Republican Party, but they're actually Democrats.
We got to get away from the party. We got to get back to our first law, creation in the Bible. No human laws contradict these. And every time we talk about parties or people or rhinos, you know, we're just creating a ball game, and we're in the stands, and we're yelling at them, and they don't do anything. So, my problem is we're not punishing for what I think we should be able to punish. And there was a guy, Tench Cox, the Pennsylvanian back at in the Confederation Congress, and he wrote, I got this out of the Liberty Fund, you know, encyclopedia of the 4,000 words that's the Constitution, and it's like 5,000 pages. But basically he said that anybody, and if I had my mind about me, I'd be able to quote it, but I don't, so I'll just quote at it. He says, anybody that would violate our Republican form of government and take away from the people, you know, their ability to run their government is guilty of high treason. And then I go to Blackstone and his fourth book, sixth chapter, and look at the penalty for treason, and it's worse than anything you'll ever see on a movie. And we're just not punishing. So, I've been reaching out. You know, I've got Paxton. He's signed two of my books now. He wants to be in the Blackstone Book Club, which I haven't started because I don't know enough Blackstone. But anyway, I can't get anybody to tell me that I'm wrong. So I think, you know, how do we proceed on prosecuting high treason for the violation of our only guarantee in the Constitution? And that's our right to choose who represents us. And we've been screwed here in Texas for 14 or more years.
Well, now you're talking about the guarantee of a Republican form of government, which is who we are as a people. Correct? And, this is kind of difficult to get through the minds of people who went to law school. Okay. They're so deeply invested in the lie that they were taught. You know, first of all, you know, people enter college at 18, 19 years old usually, and they've already been polluted in the, especially the last few decades, they've been polluted in K through 12 to begin with. But even going back to when I went to school, they lacked teaching civics and the Constitution. And so without that kind of an education, then they deliver the lie to you. And the minions of the New World Order, which are the Esquires, the barristers, they have not got a clue, most of them anyway. They don't have a clue that really they've been working to destroy this republic, because that's the purpose of an Esquire. And that's why they were sent here by the king back in 1750. And so so their purpose is to destroy our court system and to turn us into chancery courts in opposed to common law courts. And that's the problem. And I just finished writing another book. I just I put it out for publishing today. It'll take a couple of days to get through. I haven't even got anything up on the page yet on this. The book is Memorandums of Common Law. And I think I have 40.
Great.
I think I have 40 memorandums in the book, and then of course I have an introduction to it to talk a little bit, and you know maybe we'll read it one night. It's not too long, but it'll probably take about 40 minutes to read. But in any event, that particular book I wrote for the sole purpose, and I make the point in the introduction, the preface, that really is to lay out all of the problems that we have in our government, and mostly it's focused in on the courts, which also deals with, of course, our political problems. It deals with the 16th Amendment, it deals with the 17th Amendment, those two particularly. Both of them were destructive, although the Supreme Court said the 16th Amendment really didn't add anything new. People are not corporations, and that's really the whole game that they play in USC 26 is making an individual corporation. That's why we got the caps. When you go into court, they try to put everything in caps. They're supposed to identify them as a corporation. But in any event, trying to teach people that are not really used to being free, that they think they're free, but they're not really free. There's so much that they don't realize, the power and the authority. To come to the appreciation and understanding that we are the lawmakers. Congress is not the lawmakers. We've given them the ability to make statutes and regulations to control, of course, all of the different government agencies and also, commercial activity, and that's administrative law, which is legislative law, and that's the process that we set up for them. But they don't get to really decide anything concerning law that has anything to do with we, the people, okay? We're not under that. We're under common law. They have wiped away the ability of the juries to be able to make decisions on the law. The judge says, all the time to the juries, you get to decide the facts, but I'm going to tell you what the law is. And any statute lacks due process. And that's a key point to be understood. Also, the judge that is applying that is an administrative judge, and we have to realize that, too. Therein is the argument and the debate. But also that brings us back to being a republic. They've convinced in the mind of the people that we're a democracy. Now, I have written a lot of things and sent a lot of things to Trump and the people in his administration and the new ones that have come in since he's become the president, of course. But we've been communicating with him for a while as a grand jury. And still, they keep using the word democracy. It really is disturbing to me that they're not waking up to this.
The deal is they swore an oath to our Constitution and the written law. All of our founders for 11 years before the Declaration were studying Blackstone. He saved common law for England and for us too. And anything that man does, if they could say democracy, I don't want to fiddle with anything that man does. I engraved the back of my watch. It says no human laws. And we've got to know the law. And I just don't, these guys swore an oath, they've broken their oath, and they need to suffer the penalty for high treason. I just don't know how to go about
it. I agree with that. Again, we did a presentment and an indictment concerning the federal judiciary, and we did speak, of course, of the state judiciary, but we're really focusing in on the federal because they can only deal with the federal judiciary and the federal problems. And our take on it ultimately is that every single one of these judges need to be removed. And they do have to be tried for treason. There is different depths of treason. Not everybody that's guilty of treason necessarily gets the death penalty, nor do they deserve it.
Okay.
You got a lot of people who are just totally ignorant, and that is the problem. I don't know if you remember back, and this is played numerous times in numerous places, where Biden starts to talk about the Constitution, and he starts to read off all men are created equal. Then he didn't know where to go from there. He says, you know the thing. I mean, he has no clue on what the Constitution says.
Yeah.
And I think that is the state of all people, or most people that are in government today. They're in there for the job and for the money, because there's a lot of money to be made, particularly on federal level. And they all seem to be poor when they go in, and they all become millionaires and buy million-dollar properties and, where do they get all this money from? Of course, it's all fraud.
What I'm trying to get at, especially in Texas, we need a place to focus on. And it seems like treason was committed. Everybody here is pissed off with the choice of the Speaker of the House. And now we have a parliamentarian that was high. He was like Obama's lawyer when Obama was in office. So we have, every judge is pissing us off. So that divides us because we don't know what judge to impeach first. But we've got a whole segment, like 20% of the Texas House, that committed treason. Everybody's pissed off. And I just want to know how they did not violate, our Article 4 and our guaranteed constitutional republican form. And that seems something that people can rally around. And, I don't want to interrupt, but the other thing we could rally around is where the Bible is supposed to be. We have just let man tell us where the Bible is supposed to be, and our founders, 17 of them, you know, commissioned 10,000 Bibles for the use in school. So, you know, that's another thing that we could focus on, because we've got the churches and good people in churches and preachers if they'll just stand up. But anyway, I don't want to get distracted on that. But I've got two core issues. One of them is Bibles in schools, and right now it's this violation of the guaranteed Republican form. And Tench Cox was very strong on this. He said, you know, any man or group of men, no matter how powerful, if they should, you know, take the people's right to express themselves in government, which is why we voted for these guys in the first place. So they've done that. You know, I just want to know how to proceed on high treason. There's a Brian Harrison that's, you know, a really, really strong Republican, and he feels like he's the lone gun, you know, as a representative, but he's just putting out really great stuff. He worked for Trump in the first administration. I think he's too good, just as Paxton, because Paxton's too good for Trump. Trump doesn't want him in there because he'll stand up for creation in the Bible, as will Brian Harrison. But and I may be just ragging on, but there's got, you know, we've got 36 guys that are guilty. We've got a House of 150. So, you know, that's roughly a quarter of the House that should be hung from a tree until they're almost dead, and then disemboweled and then quartered, and then the head given to the king.
Well, that would be cruel and unusual punishment, of course.
That's what Blackstone, that was the law when our founders were studying.
Again, you know, look, you hang someone to death, that's one thing, and it's a very painful, horrible way to go. Well, although it could be very quick if the hangman ties the rope correctly.
Yeah, right.
When the neck is broken. But look, we're sending them to God for the final judgment. That should be sufficient. Death to send them out of this world, and that, of course, is for the ones that really are the seriously evil ones that you know, really are really pushing this whole thing. There's a lot of people, like I said, they're just useful idiots. Lawyers will never think that they're useful idiots, but that's exactly what they are. You know. Now, again, a lot of these questions, we are working on a solution for this, potentially speaking. Anyway, I'm talking with a few people that belong to a relatively large group. And they got half the plan together. What they're lacking is the education for their plan, and we're talking about that. And once I understand exactly what they're doing and it's compatible and agreeable to what we believe as far as the Constitution is concerned, and I think it might be, then we're going to partnership with them, and we'll introduce that they're working ultimately on the state level. We're working on ultimately the federal level, because even if we don't work on the state level, it's just going to take longer to get the states back, and we have to win on the federal level first. We first have to get our courts of justice back, courts of law, which are courts of record, in the federal courts. We have to get these administrative judges to do the right thing. The only decision or anything they could make when they bring anything into a federal court is on a constitutional issue, and their job is to champion the Constitution. That's it. You know, I was reading up on these administrative judges. They're not necessarily the bottom. They make a very point, very clear. Although they use trial court decisions to, you know, uphold a case here or uphold a case there, it's called comity, C-O-M-I-T-Y. Although they use that, what I'm reading right now is it talks about these individuals that on the trial level, it's not the law. Their decision is not the law. It's ultimately the suggestion of what the law should be, okay? And the ultimate decision has to be done ultimately if it's appealed and taken up to the higher court and eventually to the individuals that are the law judges, you know, that they have both. They work in both courts. They work in the courts of record and courts not of record, and they're the ones, and that brings us right up to the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court, where they can make the final decision on law. But as we go below that, it's administrative judges, and it's all just what they think might be. And usually the Supreme Court will hear cases when there is confusion between the different courts, the lower courts, and they get different opinions, and that's all they are is opinions, but it's not necessarily law yet. Although they act as if it's law, they use their trial court decisions as if it's law, and they just move on. They use their rules as law. The whole thing is destroyed. It's really just totally destroyed, all upside down. We have to fix that, and that's the main thing we're working on, trying to fix that problem. And the only way you can fix that problem is through education, number one, and getting an attorney general that will actually indict all of these judges, because every single one of them needs to be indicted. Now, eventually, we will then be able to use the leverage of these decisions down into the state courts and start shutting these chancery courts down, because chancery courts are not courts of record. And that's a huge problem, because anybody that's been convicted of anything since going back to, 1938, okay, and even before that, they were tried in chancery courts. Even with the juries involved, it still was a chancery court, because, the juries are controlled. And once the juries are making decisions and applying statutes, agreeing with the court's position or the prosecutor's positions on statutes lack due process. And so that whole system just doesn't work. That's a huge dilemma. That's a really huge dilemma.
I agree with everything that you're saying. Totally. Once again, that's kind of, it's not a point of focus, because there's so many judges and so many lawyers and so many courts that are so corrupt that I think what we have failed to do is and I'm not going to the Blackstone form of punishment for high treason, but we haven't punished anybody for anything. And if we did, and we need a focus. And so one of the focuses, or two of them, one is the Bible in school, and we can do that locally with each school board everywhere,
Well, let me tell you, there'd be a lot of people up in arms on that. We have to do it from a different level. We have to do that on the federal level, because it was the federal courts that destroyed that whole thing. What was that, 1961 or 62 or something like that? Okay. The reason I wrote this book, Memorandums of Common Law, which I have a picture of the book itself, the cover that I put together for this book.
I had that book.
No, I haven't put it out yet. So this one,
the Handbook on Common Law.
Well, I have lots of books. All of my books are really on common law, ultimately, But this one is a Memorandums of Common Law. I think 40 memorandums. And now these memorandums, one of the memorandums is Engle versus Vitale, and that's the one with the Bible in school, where the United States Supreme Court, who had no power, no authority to make such a ruling, because they can't rule on issues. They can only rule on law, But in any event, we have to get that overturned, and that's one of the things we need to do. Now, I put this book together originally for the sole purpose of sending it to Trump and his administration, in the hope that at least some of them will read it, and hopefully some of them that are not lawyers will really understand it quickly and maybe start, trying to push the others. We got to do something with this, because the whole thing is built around the corruption and the destruction of our court. And that's why all of these particular memorandums I put it together for that purpose. And the introduction to this book, which maybe one evening I'll read this, which leads into the purpose of this book, is to provide memorandums of law in support of the common law to educate the people of our true heritage and to reveal the destructive alterations of our republic by enemies domestic. Our heritage is in the law, and our inheritance is liberty. And so hopefully one day in the next few weeks I'll be able to just read this out on a Monday night. And like I said, it'll probably take a half hour to 40 minutes to get through just the introduction, the preface.
I don't want to miss that. I really don't want to miss
that.
Well,
it's recorded. If you miss it, it's recorded, video recorded, and we'll put it up on Rumble and YouTube. Rumble, we get a lot of hits,
What is your Rumble channel? Is it just National Liberty Alliance?
Well, if you go to, let's see if I can, you should be able to find it, Rumble at National Liberty Alliance, but let me put this in here. What is wrong one? Oh, I'm in the wrong place. Hold on. This is where I need to be. Okay, if you go to today's issues and you come down to NLA Monday Open Forum videos, at the end of every Monday evening, I upload the latest one. And these are all of them going back for quite some time now. Now, if you wanted to find our Rumble page, I don't want that to start up. Hold on. Well, let's get it starting up so I can show you. In the, down on the bottom right-hand corner, I'm sure you know, you can go directly up to Rumble and get on a Rumble page here, finding us here. And this is National Liberty Alliance's page. And you should be able to find us at rumble.com. Let's see, I think it's just National Liberty Alliance.
Okay, well, I'll find it. Let me ask you one last question. It's pretty simple, but I pray that you'll accept it.
Okay, did just you write a book on rumble.com / National Liberty Alliance will get us to our Rumble page.
National Liberty Alliance. Rumble.com/.
No, no. Rumble.com/ National Liberty Alliance.
Yeah, right. That's, yeah. Okay. So we'll go there. But can you write your next book on Blackstone, or maybe just the introduction to Blackstone, or
Blackstone is, I think I probably talk a lot about Blackstone through Jefferson, because Jefferson was a big fan of Blackstone. All of our founding fathers were.
Right.
And a lot of his quotes really are probably coming, well, they are coming, a lot of them are coming from Blackstone.
Yeah.
But to write anything, what are you thinking on Blackstone?
Well, okay, I don't know. I read some of it every day. I'm not a lawyer type. I don't have a lawyer mind like you. I'm a scientist. I'm an EMC squared. But every time I open the book, I get goosebumps, because I can't believe that's what he was teaching our founders right before they wrote our Declaration and 22 years before they wrote the Constitution. So that is the best expression of our founders' intent when they wrote our laws. And if we do anything with that's been influenced by man, like people say in democracy when we're really a republic, that doesn't mean anything. If the judges that are talking about all this stuff and doing all the wrong things, that doesn't mean anything, because they swore an oath to follow what our founders studied and what our founders wrote from Blackstone. And Blackstone was truly a miracle, because the chair position that he was wanting at Oxford fell through. He was despondent. And then this guy came up named Vinerian, and he funded his chair. And that's how we got the resurrection of common law across the world. But nobody knows it. And nobody wants to even talk about it, because it really is the core of what our founders' intent was.
It's also the core of our common law in, I don't want to say in statutes, but American jurisprudence, okay,
right.
Really built upon Blackstone.
But none of these people that I'm talking to, none of the judges I talk, nobody knows this stuff.
No, they don't, because they're totally ignorant. They don't know the law. All
but
they know is
that. If we could resurrect Blackstone, that would be a way to teach them or embarrass them publicly at commissions, councils, and boards. You know, at each of the 3,142 counties in America, you know, to get us back on track. We need a spark.
Well, again, it starts with the people. It starts with the people getting a proper education. It starts with the people getting involved in their community through committees of safety, working
right.
Through all of the towns and the villages and everything within their counties, coming together and building that up, getting educated, and then starting to take control from the ground up. I mean, and you had mentioned it in the beginning of our conversation here concerning the school boards. I mean, that's the first focus. And that focus we teach being the first focus for two reasons. One, our children need to be cured of all of the evil that has been placed upon them. You know, we need to get into the schools as quick as possible to start to unwind all these things that they've been putting in our children's minds, and some of it is so damaging. You know, they demoralized our children in so many ways, and really just destroyed their minds. And But we have to change our education, get education back. So that's number one. It's very important. I think it's one of the most important things we need to do. But at the same time, by doing that, it's the way we build our committees of safety to become very powerful with a large amount of people that would come in. Because every time you go into a school district, you know, here in Dutchess County where I live, I think there are 19 school districts. And of those 19 school districts, we go to them one by one. You know, you're going to pull the people in that community to work because they're the ones that have the children in the schools, those schools. When they go to the school board with us and see what we're doing at a committee of safety meeting in order to prepare to go to that school board and then go and take power and authority of those school boards with the sheriff, because you have to have the sheriff with you. You could do it without the sheriff, but it's not as powerful. But you got the sheriff with you, you got the Corwanto with you, you got enforcement with you. Either they obey or they're out of there. Once the people see that power and authority of the people and they realize that liberty of the right of government by consent and how to exercise it through that process, okay, you'll pull a lot of those people into your committees of safety. By the time you get through all the school districts, I'm willing to bet you'll have thousands or thousands of people involved in your committee of safety. Now, that might take a year to accomplish, maybe a little more, but it's accomplishable. You can do it. And if we're all doing that, we got a government back. Remember, you know, government is not by the majority, but by the majority of those who participate. And we're the ones who put them in power, and we're the ones that can take them out of power. People don't understand that. They don't know that. They don't know how to do that. Well, that's what they need to learn, and that's what we need to teach the people. And we're teaching them, of course, to start a committee of safety. You know, you click on that button and just follow the breadcrumb trail here. It'll lead you through all the things you need to know. Eventually, you get to the page. It's under handbooks, videos, and tools. And what I'm talking about right now, we do that in the video. I think there's five videos here. Let's see how many there are. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There are six videos. I think they're about a half hour each. Maybe some of them might be 40 minutes, but they're not long. And over a period of six meetings, you'd play all of these videos and discuss it.
Okay.
This is what empowers people.
So, and you're absolutely right, and this is how we can do the Committee of Safeties at the, you know, the school boards, commissioner's court, city council. You know, anybody can go to what they can want to go to. But we got to get back to first law. And what's the topic that we focus on? And what is Blackstone was the most quoted human being. What was the most quoted thing by our founders? And what is the thing that is of most interest to, I don't know, how many, do we have 100,000 churches? How many churches do we have? What is their focus?
No idea.
Their focus is the Bible. So if we make that our focus when we go to the school boards, I mean, it's just irrefutable with our history of the Bible in our founding, you know, in what our founders quoted as the basis of our law, and then what our, you know, guys that ended up being Supreme Court justices when they were in the Confederation Congress commissioned 10,000 Bibles for the use in school. So I think that might be our best focus, because every church, if a church doesn't focus on this, then that church is evil. And so we find the good churches, we find the people in there. They can do their committee of safety thing. They can go to their church. They can make classes in their church. And then prepare that could actually be the anchor for committees of safety, because what are they making safe? They're making the Bible and the Word of God their focus.
Well, absolutely. I agree 100%. And, you know, you would want to, and I didn't add this in, but that's a good point. You know, if you take a particular a school district, for instance, and the boundaries of that school district are defined, you know, so you know
right,
what...
Right, it's very excellent.
Then
that's
you
closest to the people, it'll be closest to your committee of safety, because
right.
Your school board is your neighbors.
Right, and to add what you're saying to it, because what we're looking at and I've been teaching, is that you go down to real property, and whatever school district you're looking into, you can get the names and addresses and labels of all the people in that school district, so you can send a postcard out to them, which we've created a postcard to, and people can change that as they will. But the thing that I didn't add to this that you brought up is we could also find all the churches within that particular school district.
Right.
Approach the pastors in those churches.
Right.
To invite them to the meeting along with the parents. Now you've got a real great coalition. And
there
you've got,
you go. You're giving me goosebumps, man. I'm all over goosebumps.
So that I'm going to add to our, you know, teaching here as far as, you know, building committees of safety. Because, yes, look, at if every county was working on this and doing it diligently, this is the only way. I don't know how many times I got to say this. This is the only way to have government by consent. You have to have grassroots coming up together, people with the mind of taking back this country, taking back from the grassroots, from the bottom up, and bringing back the law. And law brings us right back to God's law.
501c3 might have something to say about that. Some churches are sensitive, some aren't.
Right. That could be a problem, but that's their problem.
If they're not sensitive to the Bible, then they're not a church.
That's right. So if they hold that above the teachings that they should be, Christian teachings, then, you know, then we don't need them anyway then.
Absolutely. One last question. I think you mentioned a time or two ago about where you, there's a service where you can get the labels.
Real property. You go down to the county building. Every county building, they have an office called Real Property. And they take control of the maps and the, you know, all of the boundaries of the different you know, towns, villages, so on and so forth. And every person that lives in that community, they have the names and addresses. Now, I used to do that. I used to go into the real property to get labels run off years ago when I was soliciting.
They actually print the labels for you.
Yeah, I was trying to get to that. Okay. What happens is you go in there, you can ask for the labels to be printed off. They'll charge you probably a penny a label, I don't know. But I used to go in and I used to do that so that I can solicit different people in different things, whether it be if they lived in mobile homes or modular homes, whether they lived in single families or two-family homes or apartments. Or, you know, you could break it up and get all of those different things broken up with labels, and you can solicit them. You know, I did that as from the perspective of being a contractor. And but you can go in there and you could do the same thing with the different areas. You can get everyone in the county. You can get everyone in certain school districts. And now you can take a thumb drive or a CD and bring it in and give it to them and have them put it onto the CD or the thumb drive. They shouldn't charge you by the label at that point. Matter of fact, I think it was Bob Schultz who won a case in the court about that, where they were trying to charge an exuberant amount of money to get all of the people, you know, and the addresses and stuff. And they wanted to charge them so much for each one. And he says, all it is the push of a button, and I'll even buy the what do you call it, the CD. Well, he did win in court, and I think they came up with a number like $5, which I think still is too much. But in any event,
$5 for per label?
All of the labels and whatever you want to look for in the county.
So, okay.
It'll be in the CD, and you can then put it into an Excel, and then you can print them off right into envelopes.
Yeah, okay. Could we drill that down to, like, an elementary school?
You mean the process of doing that?
Right. So you get closer to your neighbors that you could communicate one-on-one, face-to-face, go to their, knock on their door, and talk to them.
Well, that you could do as a committee man, which is who we are. We're the real committee men. You know, during the election time, when I was a committee man, I'd walk papers and, you know, to get people onto the ballot. And even myself as a committee man, you know, that's when I didn't really know enough and I was trying to figure things out. But in any event, that's an opportunity to knock on the door, get a signature, to put someone into office, because that's what we're going to do during the election time, is put people into office that have gone through studies. You know, they studied the Constitution. They've taken a test on National Liberty Alliance. And so now we'll support them because they know the Constitution. And And so, you know, to get them into office, you have to get signatures. And so when you visit these people and you're knocking on doors to get signatures, to get these people into, you know, onto the ballot, then you can also hand them literature and invite them to your Committee of Safety meeting, you know. So that's just right. another way to grow.
But what I would like to do is focus on, you know, if we could get it down to the elementary school level in each school board, and then, you know, I could handle that. I think.
Well, that's where we would start, elementary working up, K yeah, through 12. Yeah.
So you think we could get the labels for, like, an elementary,
of course, that's the point, yes. But
okay,
look at the school districts, you get the labels for everyone that lives in the school district, okay? So you'll have people with children that are in high school, even people in college. You have children that are in the elementary school down K through 12, and people who don't even have children in school but are interested, maybe they're grandparents, maybe they're going to want to become parents, you know, whatever. You're going to draw that whole community, okay?
Okay.
And you're going to have the opportunity for them to see an organized Committee of Safety operating and focusing in on this particular problem, and then planning for that problem, creating the necessary, you know, questions that you want to ask. What's in the minds of the parents here? What do you think? And we want to put something together. And then when you go to the board, you know, we all have, we choose certain speakers, but there'll be a lot of us that are speakers, because sometimes they'll cut you off real quick. You know, oh, you got 2 minutes. The next guy would move up and continue where they left off. We'll get that whole message out to them. And you have the sheriff with you and a Kuowantu in your back pocket for each individual sitting in the chairs up there on the board, because we'll get that information beforehand, and their names and information we need on them, so we can serve them if they're not going to be obedient to the constituents for that school district.
You're freezing me with goosebumps. Now, one thing that I just thought as you were saying all that, you said K. So can I focus on, you know, a school district, just the parents that have children in kindergarten, and those are the ones that are most going to be the most active about saving their children. So if I could,
You're missing a big point to this thing. You're getting the entire school district, so you're getting everything. Even you're going to get every single person that lives in that district. So you're going to be hitting people who have children in kindergarten, first grade, all the way to 12. You're going to have people who even are out of school, maybe have children in college. You're going to get all those people to come to that Committee of Safety, and you're going to talk about the particular problems. You know, there's two curriculums that have to be created. One has to be to teach teachers how to teach, because I don't believe they know how to teach to begin with, okay? The second thing, well, there's actually three things you got to do. One of the other things is we have to resurrect the common law, corruptions of the morals of a minor, okay? When I was a kid, I heard that brought up from time to time as a kid by my parents or other people, you know, talking. And, you know, that was a crime, okay? Teaching the children the things that they've been teaching them is a crime. It's corrupting the morals of a minor, okay? That's a crime. These people need to go to jail. And so that's one other thing we need to teach, to let it be known. You start teaching things that's corrupting my child's morals, we're coming out to get you. We're going to see the sheriff, and we're going to have you indicted. Plus you have the connection to the jury administrators through the committees of safety, because that's all part of what we need to do on the grassroots level. So we got a connection directly to the grand jury and the trial jury. Well, the grand jury is particularly through the administrators. And so you're going to deal with all the problems. But we need a curriculum to unwind the damage that has been done, which needs to be brought in. And it's got to be done at every level. It needs to go into the colleges. It needs to go into the high schools. We need to go into, you know, the elementary schools, all the way down to K, because they've already been corrupted. We have to unwind them to the best way we can. And that's a big challenge. But we have that. But in order to do that, it gets back to money, because, you know, if we handled it, and I don't know anybody else that's thinking on these things, but if we handled it, you know, we'd have to get a small team of authors, and I've already got at least one, and myself, so we got two, and I could probably get a few more that would be focused in on law and focused in on this problem. And then also we'd have to hire other people. We need a couple of $1 million to do all the necessary books we need for education. We have to write curriculum for from K all the way through 12. And we have to write a curriculum that brings us to the point, because I put this at the end of these memorandums, which we've shared before, which is eighth grade final exam in Kansas in 1895. It says, this is an eighth grade final exam from 1895 from Salina, Kansas, USA. It was taken from the original document on file at the Smoky Valley Genealogical Society and Library in Salina, Salina, Kansas, and reprinted by Salina Journal. And it's a test. It's an eighth grade test, and it hits into college level teachings. And that's where our children should be by the time they get to the 12th grade. This is an eighth grade test. You got four more years after this. Just think what our children, if we had a proper education, an education that builds the mind, builds morality, frees the individual, teaches the child on how to become aware of themselves and to, you know, become a good person, a good citizen, and return back to the community the favor for the liberties that we have received, and, you know, just got to be taught correctly. Teach them to think, and then give them the information they need to be thinking about. And we have children coming through, not with a doctrinal, you know, education, but with a college education from the standpoint of the basics, math, English, and so on.
Okay. So regarding finances, once again, and I'm as cheap as you can imagine, but, you know, if we can focus on those pre-K and the Ks, and those parents are going to be the most active because they see what's happening to all the other kids, and they don't want their kids to be
with all of them when you go through this process.
What?
All the levels. You're not going to be able to break it up and just get kindergarten kids. But remember, you got people who aren't parents yet, and they're interested. But you want the people of the entire community within that school district to come to that meeting and get them excited and see the power and the authority of the people, and then exercise that power and authority and do something to bring our schools back under the authority of we the people.
If we light an inferno on the parents of kindergartners, then all the other grades will follow.
So I agree. We're not going to be able to isolate them. But I got to move on to the next caller, Bob.
Yeah, okay. Hey, thanks a lot, John.
We'll talk some more in the future on this.
But Blackstone Book.
Hopefully one day someone with deep pockets will realize what we're doing and support us so that we can go professional. We need to go professional.
Well,
we're not going to be able to do these things without having real serious people working on this problem and being paid to do it, because people need to feed themselves and family and so on. You know, we have to live.
Well, I've got what I consider a lot of money, but I would like to throw it at the kindergarten level just to reduce the total cost of the whole thing. Instead of millions, maybe hundreds of thousands.
Okay, we're going to move on, Bob. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we could take our next call. It looks like Warren's back in. Is this Warren from New York? You got the mic.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay. So the question is, when you do...
Is this Warren from New York?
Yes, this is Warren, the COS.
Okay. Go ahead.
When you do a writ of quo warranto for jurisdiction, right, and the judge says, oh, you got to do an amendment because you can't charge... the judges, because they have immunity, but we know that's a lie, but they're trying to bring it back into codes and statute. How do you get around that to keep it under the writ of quo warranto so that they won't try to go take control of the case?
Well, again, if the paper is written properly, we just filed a case against the controller here in New York. And in that case, when we went to file it, we filed it as an action at law. When the clerk received that case, they went to the back room and spoke to somebody. And after so many minutes back there, they came back out and they said, look, you have to cross this out and put complaint. And I said, no, we don't have to do anything like this. This is an action at law. And I had to threaten them with the U.S. code. I forget the code. I had at the tip of my, you know, my hand at the time. But there's a U.S. code that they'd be in violation of by not receiving that paper and trying to make us do something we don't want to do. In other words, the paper was prima facie. You have a job to take it. And if you refuse it, you're facing up to, I didn't say what they were facing, but I said the penalties are pretty stiff. It's 2 years in jail. If you refuse that paper, if it's prima facie, or if you destroy that paper, if you hide that paper, if you, whatever you do, if that paper doesn't go into the process and move along the process of law, due process, then that is, and they prevent that from happening, that's 2 years in jail for them. And that's a statute that is applied towards the clerks and the judge. And if a judge is involved forcing the clerk to do it, I think it's 10 years for the judge. So, you know, it's pretty stiff. And I pushed those codes on them, and some guy came out, and then he went back into the back room. Then he came back out and said, you don't have to put that word there. We'll take it the way it is. So we're able to get it in. So they understand. So if you build your case properly, because we do have another problem, and we're working on that problem, and that is getting our courts of justice back open.
I know you said email it to you, so I did email it to you, but I know they don't want to charge the judges, so I know they try to put it, we'll allow you to go to a jury trial, because they put the box of, do I want a jury trial? But I sent you the paperwork to look at it.
Yeah, don't do everything there to push that away and really throw your case out at some point. And if you do get in on the jury trial, then you're going to have to free the jury. You've got to liberate the jury. That's another fight, another battle. We have to correct the problem from square one, okay?
Right.
And that is to get our courts of record back open. These judges on the state level, the county level, and the town levels, and all of those levels down there, they maybe some on the state level, maybe on the higher courts, the appellate courts, they may understand this.
Hang on.
The ones that are on the trial courts, they don't understand it. Most of them don't understand what a court of record is. If you tell them if you ask them what a court of record is, they'll say it's a court that keeps a record. They don't understand what it means. And we define it in footnotes. And I don't think they read footnotes either.
Well, I do know that I still can open up another writ of court warrant concerning the adversary pleading, but I sent you all the documentation, so everything's not dead. There's still life to it. And even with getting the trustee, to admit to what they did, so it's a lot, but I sent you the information. So you can review it.
Well, the court warranto brings them to be by what authority, and they have 3 days to respond to that. And if they fail to respond, that's when you move it into the court for discharge. And then those people are removed from their position. They have no choice because that's the law.
So they didn't wait 3 days. They waited like a month or a few months.
But because you're not pushing it the right way. But still, even with that, you're going to get resistance and all kinds of evil. You know, it's just to get it through is difficult. To get anything through the courts is difficult. But it's just like the way that a habeas corpus would work. They got 3 days, and if they don't come, the prisoner gets set free. If they don't come to respond and give reason why, by what authority and what the charges are, and lay out the evidence, then that's thrown out. The prisoner is loosed. Same thing with the board. That's the law. Now, to make them obey the law is another problem now. That's when you may have to move it up to federal court for cause, for denial of the due process of law.
Well, and I definitely put...
You have to have a judge. You have to have a judge who's usually an administrative judge who understands this thing and is not going to maintain the status quo and is going to obey the law. Then you're going to have to move it from there to the appeals and then to the United States Supreme Court. And again, that's a big thing to get to the United States Supreme Court. The thing is we have a lot of battles that are fighting, and we can't give up. We can't just, we have a lot of fronts we're fighting on, and that's what we're doing. And we're working, the federal court is the key, in my opinion, to bring brings the court system back right down into the state.
I agree with you, but I did send you the information, so.
All right, I'll look for it.
Right.
Okay. Okay, next caller. Thanks, Warren. I'll see you tomorrow, right?
Tomorrow, think, right?
Yeah. Right. Okay. Talk to you later. Right. Okay, next caller here is Ross. Go ahead, Ross. You got the mic.
Hey, John. How are you?
Good.
I think the caller that talked about doing it in the churches, the problem why a church would resist that we have a community safety reorganized in our church, my church I belong to.
Your church would reject it?
Yes.
Why do you think that?
It's because they don't want to get involved in politics.
Well, then, therein is the problem, the ignorance of people. This has nothing to do with politics. It does have something to do with the political process, but it has to do with the right of the people to have government by consent. And that's in the Declaration of Independence, brings us right into our Constitution. But the Declaration of Independence, which is the foundation of our law, and one of the foundational points is the right of the people to have government by consent. Okay, that is the key. And this was a covenant with God, a desire to be under his law and thereby receive his blessings of liberty. And as long as we remain as a Christian nation and obedient to the best that we can be and lift up, the king of the court, then we're going to receive those blessings of liberty. But people are ignorant to these things. They think, and I hear this all the time, I talk to, I'm not into politics. It has nothing to do with politics. I'm not into politics either. Parties, it's damaging to our republic. No republic can survive political parties. It's just not going to happen. We're at the brink of losing everything we have because of political parties. But in any event, they need to understand this. There was another large group we had approached many, many years ago, and they said the same thing. I'm trying to think what the name of that group was. It's a very well-known group. Something Society. Maybe someone could pipe it up if they know what I'm talking about. But in any event, they said, oh, we don't get into politics. Well, that's nothing to do with politics. It's a political process. We need to take back, get right people into office, you know. But it's ignorance, and it takes an education to turn that mind around. And that's what we're up against. We have a lot of people who will reject our message right off the face of it because, after all, they've been educated, and particularly lawyers, we spent $250,000 to get this education. You're going to tell me I'm wrong? You're going to tell me we're not under Roman law? I was taught I was under Roman law. Everything we do is accordance to the Roman law process, okay? And you try to tell them, no, we're under the law that was designed for Israel, going back, 1500 B.C., and they're just not getting it. They think common law is trial court decisions. It's so hard to change them. They don't want to hear. They don't want to listen. And that's a problem for lawyers. And they're all over the place. These minions are everywhere.
Yeah. It's how you message that to my church is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Okay.
I message that to like my ward or state. I don't have to do it directly to the headquarters because it's an international church, not just United States.
I really didn't get that. Something about you have to do what?
How do I message information to my local church or state level in my church.
Well, look, the only way you're going to get, you know, a pastor or whatever of a church to get involved in the community, in the grassroots, to bring things back to, there's no other way to correct the schools, the problems in the school, unless the people get involved. And if people get involved and they go to the boards, now they're involved with political process, so they think, or politics, so they think. And it's not the case. We're involved with issues. We're involved with taking back control of our government. It's not the politics, it's the political process and the law that needs to be addressed and applied. And so if you can get a conversation concerning the law and get them educated on the law, and you know, the king of our court is Jesus Christ. You know, the jury is, you go back into Black's law, Bobier's law, the jury is the king's court, the king's bench. That's what the jury is. 12 people who are the king's bench, they're to represent the will of the king. And who's the will of the king? It brings us back to the law, the word. That's what we're representing. And he wrote it, and we don't have to know a lot about the Bible to apply this, because God said he wrote it in his law into our hearts. We already got it. And the rules of the court is called common sense. It's a construction of maxims, things that can't, our people can't argue. All men are created equal. Who can argue with that? You know, we have government by the consent of the people. Who can argue with that? Innocent until proven guilty. Who can argue with that? You know, they argue with common sense, against common sense. And people have become timid to make that battle and confused. And it's time for people to wake up and get back onto common sense. Trump talks about this all the time, common sense, common sense. So he should understand common law, because that's all common law is common sense applied with the facts. Nothing more, nothing less. That's the law. I'm sorry?
I yield.
Okay. All right, thanks a lot. Okay, we'll take our next caller. Let me see what time it is. Yep, we only got a few minutes. Last caller. You got the mic.
Hey, it's Frosini from New York.
How you doing?
Okay. The coughing has nothing. Just anyway, I'm good. I wanted just to comment a couple things. The person from Texas was interested in finding a way to really hold some treasonous people accountable. And that's important. I was reading something a while ago, and they were talking about how, like, I think it was with the Federal Reserve, and how, like, you know, before the Federal Reserve in 1913, that kind of stuff was tried and squished a few times, until that one, you know, they really got very sophisticated in getting the laws to favor them. But anyway, they said, one of the things that was said was, in some previous time, they were exposed and they were removed from those positions, and maybe even the bank failed or whatever they were trying to fail, but they were never prosecuted. And so it just happened again. So I do agree that there has to be some very serious consequences. And that doesn't mean that they won't either. I think that Trump, in a way, I think they're super afraid. You know, like, they don't know. He keeps saying, you guys are, you know, you're going to be in a ton of trouble. And Doge just laying it out, you know. So, you know, and we saw how a couple weeks ago, the number of criminal attorneys that was being looked up on Google shot up, you know, because they realized that they're in trouble. And also the services on how to erase computers, those services, also those searches for that shot up in the Washington, D.C. area. So they know. But, like, there's a part of them that they don't know how bad it might be, because it hasn't, you know, the shoe hasn't dropped yet. So that's, in a way, good. Because it's making them nervous and realizing, you know, maybe I did do something wrong and maybe I do deserve something pretty bad to happen. So anyway, the point, though, is that I do agree that something serious, not just being allowed to resign to go spend more time with their family, should be a consequence. Having said that, and then also to the point where people need to know. People don't know their rights and their and that they should be fighting for certain things. Partly because the education system, under the agency auspices of Department of Education, has probably had an agenda to dumb them down. Add to that the autism, that dumbs them down. And bad foods and the bad environment and the chemtrails, that dumbs them down. Add to that the screen time, that dumbs them down. So, you know, you've got...
Demoralization?
Say again?
And the demoralization?
Yeah, and all of that, right. Well, that's part of the agenda, is the demoralization and dumbing them down and making them that they're not even aware or concerned.
Make them depressed. Our children are being destroyed in schools.
Totally destroyed.
And the parents unwittingly don't realize this. They participate with this whole process in a little bit of a different way, and that's with them stupid phones. Oh, I'm sorry, the smartphones.
Yeah,
That's a major, major problem. Take that phone away from your child. But you're going to have them, let them have it when they come home, and teach them to use it right.
And limit it. Yeah. So anyway, so having said that, though, how are we going to get? I'm tying these together. How are we going to get people to stand up for? Hey, we want our kids to be taught, because we do value independence and that we should know our rights. That's not happening. And the church is not doing it, whether 501c3, usually that's the problem, because then they say they don't want to talk politics because it's divisive. Well, what did the Black Robe Regiment do? They went from town to town to town, and they brought the message of freedom in the context of true freedom, the gospel. And they were not separate, and they garnered enough support that even just 2%, I don't know if we need more now, but whatever, but just 2% were enough to launch the revolution and change the trajectory of this country to something completely unrecognizable from how it started.
Well, like I said, you only need about 100 people per county, but you're going to get a lot more than that if you're doing things right and building your community.
Because look at what happened with Trump. You know, like Trump had, let's say, mixed support the first time. Not anymore.
Right. He didn't know who the enemies were. He had enemies in his camp all around him. He couldn't get a lot of things. Not just that.
Between the first and the second was the process of the people seeing it for themselves, the consequences of these, in other words, let them do it. Who cares? It's not going to affect me. Oh, crap, it's affecting me. It's affecting me really hard.
I believe that that was part of the plan to let them rob the election.
I agree. The education department or whatever ends up being our education has to include those elements, but it has to be vital. It has to be important to them. And I'm linking it to the Bible. The other person was saying we got to get the Bible back in its proper place. Well, you know what? I came from a church. I left the church somewhat recently, a big mega church that in many ways is a good church, but they absolutely categorically avoid divisive issues, unless they're culturally convenient.
But here's another way to deal with the problem, just thinking of it. You know, if you're dealing with the problem with the church, don't even bring up the idea of the political side of things. Just that we have to get a proper education, and we have to go back to the parent meetings with, you know, the board for the sole purpose.
Let me remind you what happened to parents when they went to the board.
Hold on. The point I'm trying to say is that when I was a kid, my mother used to go a couple of times a year or once a year, I don't know how often, but from time to time I just remember going to the school meeting, the board meeting, and the purpose was discussing the curriculum and different things and concerns of the parents with, the school. Now, I did go to parochial school, so maybe that was a little different, of course, than going to a public school, but I'm sure the public school had the same thing, at least at some point in time. But the parents need to be involved to discuss the education of their children.
Let me remind you, the parents went.
Hold on, because I want to get this point out. That's the main thing that people need to bring up. It's not when you approach a church, Don't even bring up the political process. Just that we're going in to get the parents into the school to discuss with them, which is necessary, and they should have been doing it for a long time now, but they haven't, is to discuss the problems with the school and what we need our children to be learning, and the churches should get involved with that. It's just the meeting of the parents with the school board.
When they went to the school boards, which a lot of them did, they got labeled as domestic terrorists, and
yeah,
some were arrested.
They're not going to get labeled with that now. The FBI has been seized. They've stopped doing that because we have new leadership. They're not doing that anymore.
But I am saying that there are a lot of parents that did in fact, go to boards.
But they weren't organized, were they?
They went and they made their point. They read from the books.
Doesn't mean anything.
I'm not going to say they weren't organized because I wasn't there to evaluate or analyze them. They seem pretty organized. Those rooms seem pretty full.
Well, hold on. People being organized to one degree is one thing, but organized with knowledge and the education of the process and the education of our rights, that's a different kind of a thing. You have to go in with power and authority. And if you're not coming in with power and authority, not with anger, and I can understand people wanting to get angry at this, but you got to lay the anger aside, go in with power and authority. And the only way you're going to do that is coming with the sheriff, and then it brings us right back to the political process, and it brings
that
back...
That would help, yes, but when you said about when your mom went, she wasn't in danger of being seen as a threat and under the possibility of being arrested. She went just to, like you said, discuss the issues. So these parents that went during COVID, they went to discuss the issues. They saw something they didn't talk about law, but they were concerned about the books that were being brought. So they, in their quote-unquote innocence, which was completely natural for them to say, okay, it's a board meeting, it's a time when people bring up their issues, and they went, and they were slammed. Now, yes, hopefully they won't do that again, but I'm saying that unless the church recognizes, for example, that the Bible and common law and the founding fathers, and so whatever politicking mechanisms are necessary, that they're intertwined to some extent, and until they're willing, and I butted heads with this church because I was like, from the beginning, I was like, this vaccine is dangerous, and they were promoting it from the stage, not like super, down your throat, but they were talking a bit positively, and some Bible studies actually did promote it, and I was like, this is dangerous, and I brought them the information, and I became an outcast. So my point is that the Bible, that the Christian presence, The church has to stand for, like it did in the Red Robe Regiment, they have to stand for the application of biblical concepts in the modern culture, and it will butt up against what they want to call politics, but I think what you were saying before is you can't help, but if you go to a board meeting that's dominated by radical Democrats, you're now engaged in politics because you shouldn't. You should just be able to go to the board and discuss issues and not be fighting an agenda.
Trump caused all these things, and it had to be caused, it had to be done. By allowing them to steal the last election, okay, and they took power, and then they realized, because that's why they continued to try to destroy him, because they saw he was not going to leave, okay? This 4 years was a necessity. It was a necessity to reveal who they really are.
Absolutely, but Trump didn't cause it. Trump saw the value in it.
Hold on. I'm just trying to respond to what you said. Okay. They revealed who they are. Okay, and if this could have been solved in his first administration, if we were a republic, okay, it could have been solved. Just because people are involved with what's going on in the political process, it's a big difference between politics, particularly politics identified with the different parties, party politics. That's the problem. That's the destruction. That's what the New World Order wanted. That's what the minions of the New World Order did. They took over the political process, and they took over our financial, you know, economic process, and they took over our judicial process. With those three things,
not control, for a long time, but it came to these last 4 years.
But it had to be exposed. Let me just finish the point. It had to be exposed. And look, it, he could move a lot quicker. There's two things that's preventing him from moving quicker. Number one, he's spoon-feeding the people. He still needs more. The people need more to see what's going on. That's number one. Number two, to go through all of these cases, everyone, just think of the army of lawyers that they got to have working together to bring all of these indictments and try all these cases. It's a huge, huge task, and that takes time to collect the evidence, bring it together, bring it to grand jury. Now, they have been doing this for 8 years now. There's tons and tons.
Didn't he say they have it all?
Yes, they do, but now they have to put it together and take it to court. And, you know, you have to have more than a couple of lawyers. You have to have more than 100 lawyers. You have to have more than 1,000 lawyers. This is a huge, huge task.
Right. Well, I'm really more talking about having the support of the people.
No, I understand, but I just want to make another point, though. A lot of people that are getting upset because it's not moving fast enough, well, that's because they're ignorant to the judicial process. And if they could learn it, then they'd understand this thing takes time. They got to build the case, put it together, lay it to the court. They got to get the indictments. They have to bring it into the courts, and they have to try these people. So that takes time.
Okay, and in terms of educating, you know, improving our education, I just, like, I would think that there are some homeschool programs, and even Jordan Peterson, it's a master class, but they're taking, like, the best teachers, and they're putting them online, and there's other programs that are just for homeschoolers that I know that they would take the best teachers that they find in certain subjects, and they would record them, and then the kids would watch those lectures, and then they would do their homework or papers from that. So we don't need to reinvent the wheel. There's a lot of really good homeschool programs, including a Common
Core. That's been going on for a long time. My children went through that process.
So I'm saying that some of those curricula could be implemented. As soon as we get the release and we're not under the clutches of the educational woke system, we can start having those kinds of classes immediately. Because they're already set up.
There's another thing, and Trump is still pushing this, that people can decide how, where they want their children to be educated. They can take the money that comes to a public school that their child might be going to and move it into a private school.
Or even to homeschool.
And to homeschool. I think he mentioned that too, where the parent would get paid to teach the children at home. That'd be great. One of the problems is that we have to teach teachers how to teach, okay? You're still going to have most children going to schools, not being homeschooled. That homeschool thing has already been around and been available. That was available when my children were young, and we sent them through, you know, we took them through homeschooling. So it's all been available, and it's still available, but not everybody wants to take
that. A lot of people didn't do it because it was more costly. It was easier to just send them to school, and they figured my taxes are paying for school. And the descent of the school system has been slower than what's been, it's been more hidden. It's more realized now, but it's because it's been deteriorating for years, but it really just came to a head, you know, whatever, the last 8 years or so. So people didn't see it.
We're going to have to pick this back up next week because it's past our time. We have one more person. I want to give them a few minutes, and then we got to close down. But get your final point out.
The homeschools have been done, but I don't think that they are in, you know, for decades now, but I don't think they had the same opportunity to be mainstream, one, because they were not kind of allowed. Two, if the parents aren't paid for it, then they have to go to work, so they're forced to send them to regular school. So the minute this is released, these homeschool programs, and, you know, yes, we have to retrain some teachers, but I think it'll be a lot easier because a lot of parents are just going to be the teachers, and then they can open, I call them pods, where they have, like, parents who do homeschooling, but instead of just doing their own, they get together periodically, and one teacher will teach, you know, like 5 or 6 kids, And so that can become like grassroots schools.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And they're going to get paid.
We'll talk some more about that in the future. We've got to move on. And it's an interesting thing to look into, think about, and talk about. So maybe next week or another time.
Okay, bye.
All right. All right, we got one other person. We'll just have a couple of minutes. Kirk, let's see, Glenn, I guess it is. What state are you from, Glenn?
From Pennsylvania.
Go right ahead. We only got a couple of minutes, but go ahead.
Yeah, this will be quick. And I got on late, and I apologize if you already covered this. It sounds like you may have. I submitted the four forms for the jurisdictional challenge for traffic court for a summary appeal. And I haven't, I just served them today. And now the hearing is tomorrow. And I have to show up because obviously they haven't had time to even review it or respond. But now if I understand, I'm going to tell the judge that, there is an active, jurisdictional challenge that hasn't been, answered yet. Now, what if he just continues to proceed?
That's probably what he's going to do because he's totally ignorant. Totally. At that level, the judgeship, totally ignorant. They have no clue on anything of what the law really is.
This is a summary appeal, so this is the county district court.
Listen, you have to bring to the attention of the court the law that requires the jurisdiction of this court is on the paper. That's what they have to do. Then once they acknowledge the jurisdiction, which is traffic court, okay, then it's a statutory court, then the position is to be made that they don't have subject matter jurisdiction unless I agree. I don't agree to this process. And now it's an argument and a case to be made that this judge has no clue of anything about it. And here's the other problem. You got they have prosecutors in these courts now. I don't remember seeing prosecutor years ago, but yeah, they got their prosecutors. So they got a lawyer there anyway. And the lawyer is going to tell the judge what the law is. And hey, this guy's crazy. He's one of those conspiracy theorists or something. And they're the minions. They're true believers in their cause. They truly believe we are under Roman law. They truly believe that our country was built and our structure of our government was built upon Rome. Okay, that's what they believe. They believe that common law is trial court decisions. Three lies. And they spent $200,000 to get those lies and to exercise those lies. And they're very difficult to turn. And the only way, unless you get a judge that's curious, because they see the power and the authority of the statutes that you're applying in there or decisions, because you should have lots of Supreme Court decisions in there, and they see something there, and they're curious and inquisitive, and they look into it, then they're going to start to fall into conflict with what they've been doing. That's difficult to make that happen. I mean, I'm sure that can happen from time to time. But that's why we have to win in the federal court. We have to take the federal court and come down with the hammer of the federal court onto all of these courts. And until we can do that, we're not going to turn these courts.
Yeah.
It's very, very hard.
It's already started, so it's just a matter of pushing forward until we start to see some results.
Right. Well, look, it also requires the people to get behind this. It requires people to support national liberty. We're the only ones working on this. If someone knows of anyone else that's doing what we're doing that we can join forces with, we need that. So let us know. But I'm not aware of anybody doing the things that we're doing. And so, therefore, in order for us to accomplish our goals, we need support. We need money. We need more people to get involved. People need to bring more people. We need to get the numbers going. And unless that happens, or until someone with deep pockets comes in and throws us a couple of million dollars, understanding and realizing what we're trying to do, until that happens, we're not going to go professional. If we don't go professional, it's going to take 10 years to do what we want to do, maybe even longer. Who knows? Okay, but we need proper education in school. That's the other thing. There is nobody out there teaching a proper education as far as concerning common law the Constitution, and civics. There's nobody out there teaching it properly. Now, again, it could be somebody out there that I'm not aware of. We'd love to connect with them, okay? But I'm not aware of anybody. So either people are going to support what we're doing, and they're going to get involved and get their committees of safety, they're going in their communities, within their counties, and they're going to do all the things necessary in order to bring our republic back again, to restore our republic, okay, resurrect our republic. But that takes people's time. They have to be educated properly. We provide that education here, and they have to be involved, and they have to follow through the process. But one person can't do it. A dozen people can't do it. We need at some point, we need 80 to 100 people per county. And believe me, you get that and you follow the protocol that we set up, I'll guarantee you, you'll be in the many, many hundreds, possibly thousands by the time a year or two goes by, because you'll build this thing up and people will see the power and the authority. But it starts with a handful of people.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm hoping to do. There's a lot to learn.
Well, again, that comes, it's on the job training. It comes with time.
Yeah.
And you can always correct the errors you make, so it's not that big a deal.
Exactly.
We all have errors. Your best lesson is finding the errors that you've been exercising and correcting them. That's the best education you get. It's called the School of Hard Knocks.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I'm doing now. I mean, I've got some guidance, of course. I've got your program and your documents. It's still doing it is, just walking through. I mean, I went to serve the district attorney, and they didn't know what it was like. Nobody ever served them paperwork before. They didn't know what to do. I was there 10 or 15 minutes waiting for them just to stamp my copy saying that they've received a copy, and they almost didn't even want to do that.
These people have been mind controlled for a long time since they were teenagers. So, they went through all this process to get and do what they're doing, and now you're going to tell them everything they've been doing is a lie? Just think how hard that is to swallow.
Yeah.
So it is an uphill battle, no doubt.
Yeah.
That's why we have to, this administration, and particularly Bondi, okay, and of course Trump, but the whole administration, they really need to come to look at. I wrote this book that I just spoke about a little while ago, Memorandums of Common Law. The main reason I wrote this book is to put into one book all the things necessary of all the problems, particularly with our courts, but also the political process, and to put it into one book focused in on identifying the problem and how we're going to correct that problem. And my plan, I just published it today, but it's going to take 72 hours before they get it going. It's up on Amazon. But I'll order, I'll start off maybe with a half a dozen books. I'd like to order 20 or 30 of them, but that costs money, and, money is limited. But I'll start off with maybe a half a dozen books, and I'm going to get them out with a letter to the key people. I'll probably do it from the perspective of the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury with a little letter introduction to the book, why it was written, and they need to deal with this, to address these problems. And it's all the process of trying to educate Trump and the administration that he has put together, particularly Trump and Bondi particularly, okay? But, the non-lawyers are the best ones to approach. Of course, Trump's not a lawyer, but he's governed by lawyers, and he puts all his stuff to lawyers. He needs to read himself this stuff. That's not a lawyer, we want to get them, because those are the ones we can turn easy, okay? If we can turn Musk, okay, Musk would be a pit bull with this if he understood what these books are saying. That's our plan. We have to get those people, because they're the ones that got to start talking right and saying, we're not a democracy, we're a republic. And we need courts of law, it's courts of common law. They need to understand it, and they need to start pushing it from up on the top, and we're pushing it from the ground level up. But that takes the people getting involved. Committees of safety pushing it, taking the ground level up and the top level down. And that's the plan that we're working on, and we're doing the best we can, what we got.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
well, it's going to be fun to watch it play out.
Yep. Okay, with that, we're going to end our program. And thanks for the call. Sorry we went over time so far, but anyway, Lord willing, we'll see you all next Monday.
All right, thanks, Sean.
All right, good night.
Good night.